We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Joining us here, how have you been handling all this this time during COVID and everything? How's it been for you and your family?
I've been very well protected, and NBC did me a great favor by allowing me to do the games during the playoffs from my home. And that was not the easiest thing for them to pull off technically at fiber optics and all the things that I don't understand. Maybe you do better than I. But they were able to sync up the picture with the description and so that it wasn't noticeable that I wasn't there. But I've been able to maintain my health wonderfully. And I think it was at that point sometime during the playoffs that if I realized how lucky I was, and it seemed like just the right time in my life to recognize how fortunate I was to have seen all I'd seen in 50 years' time and to walk away and do so with gratitude to all the people along the way who had been my broadcast colleagues and partners during those years.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, that experience calling the return to play obviously must have been, was unique as it was with you being in Michigan, calling the games from home and having, you know, Brian Boucher back at the rinks, whether it was in Toronto or Edmonton. Was that maybe the most difficult challenge in your broadcasting career, calling games like that and being home instead of being at the rink and just everything that kind of transpired during the times for the return to play?
It was not as hard as it might have seemed, because maybe at one time in my career it would have been, but we've gotten so good at bringing the game home and in televising it that I was looking at the same picture that people at home were, and so the identification was of players was not nearly as hard. In some cases the far winger was difficult to pick up, but that's the same thing with the naked eye in the arena, because a lot of times that you're going off a 4-inch number on a sleeve and they aren't turned properly for you to identify. They're turned to try and make a play and score a goal. They're not turned so that we can see them. And that's the case sometimes when you're in the arena with the naked eye. So occasionally my partners had to help me out, especially in the modern era where many goals are scored with five guys standing in front of the goaltender. And you can probably appreciate this, too. One of the series that I had was Chicago and Vegas. And Chicago wears black pants, and Vegas wears black pants.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have five guys standing in front of the goalie, and the puck is sort of black, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
And many of the goals are scored on deflections or on ricochets. So there were times that Eddie Olczyk had to help me out with off whom the puck went or who deflected it, because watching it on television where the camera moves with the shot that's coming from the blue line, you couldn't tell. So there were some challenges that way, but I really have no complaints. I didn't have a lot of really inordinate challenges in my career at all.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that, as you know, a lot of people here in Buffalo were watching the broadcasts and everything, and not only you guys, but just everybody that took part in calling games for the NBC broadcast for the return to play. Everybody did a phenomenal job, whether they were there or whether you guys were at home or wherever you were stationed. It all kind of just went off real nice and smooth, and everything just seemed to transition so well, and it really did go off without a hitch, I think.
We were fortunate in that we had such cooperation from the players and on both sides. You know, that some of the lockouts we've had have been snarly, but this was a key point in the history of the sport where both the players and the owners and the factions that have had these difficult times before got together and brought off a wonderful tournament. And when you consider that, and this is not to point fingers at the other sports, but in 24 cities for 1 week before they got on airplanes and went to either Toronto or Edmonton, the players were going back and forth from their homes, and the COVID tests were perfect there too, let alone the total of 33,000 or so that were taken that were all perfect as well. And so that part enabled them initially, when there were handshake lines and there was a little bit of guard about it, when they actually went through handshake lines at the end of each of the playoff series, it was just like it always had been, because there was no fear. They were all confident in each other. And it was just magnificent. It really was. It was magnificent to be allowed to be a part of it. And the way that the league brought it off was stunning.
Doc Emmerich, legendary NHL play-by-play man, Foster Hewitt Memorial Award winner, joining us here on the Wester Hotline on WGR. So I'm sorry if this is going to come off as such a heavy question here, Doc, but looking back on your broadcasting career, 47 years professionally broadcasting hockey and a number of different other sporting events and sports in general, how do you summarize your time and having the experiences of calling hockey and just all the events in the Olympics you've been a part of? And how do you summarize all that time in 47 years? I know it's a lot, but
yeah, no, you can't summarize it, but you can bring about some high points that did involve Buffalo. Ralph Wilson Stadium was magical, and I talked to players from both Buffalo and Pittsburgh after that, as well as the four officials. And even though we were just learning how to make outdoor ice and how to sustain it despite difficult conditions, and there were many slowdowns that day in 2008 in Buffalo, mm-hmm. and some stoppages, no one complained, and the game came off wonderfully, and it became a lifetime memory for either the winning team or the losing team. Mm-hmm. There were 70,000 plus there, and the aftermath of it all was that the fans were wonderful. There were no untoward incidents. Everyone was there to celebrate hockey, and the Winter Classic was really born and became a phenomenon that day. I'll never forget, in 1994, there was a playoff series between the Sabres and the New Jersey Devils that went four overtimes, and it was two legends and two Hall of Famers, Dominic Hasek and Marty Brodeur. There were 120 shots taken in the game that went four overtimes, and the 120th shot was the only one that went in, and that was from Dave Hannon at the right circle in the old odd that beat Brodeur. Dominic Hasek faced down Stefan Richey on a breakaway in overtime twice. Once he stopped him, and the second time Richey hit the right post. Going into the odd was phenomenal. Of course, the newer rink of the two in Buffalo was wonderful as well. But there's something about those old places that do register in your heart, especially if you're an older guy that's lost his hair and what he has left has turned gray.
Fantastic. So you're born and raised in Indiana, and it's a more of a basketball state, and you know, hockey's not predominant in Indiana too much. But how did it all get started with you in hockey? And was it during your times in college when you were going through and getting your doctorate when you were at Bowling Green? Where did it all get started with you with calling hockey games?
I saw one live game 60 years ago this December in Fort Wayne. We had then, and we still have, a minor league team called the Comets, spelled with a K. Mm-hmm. And they were about 7 years old at that time. They had been in Fort Wayne. And I had seen games in the 1960 Olympics when the United States won the gold at Squaw Valley. Those were televised by CBS. So I had a chance to see live hockey on television, and I started pestering my parents to take me to a game. All that time, I had wanted to be a Major League Baseball announcer, and I was 14 years old at that time. And so I walked into the Coliseum that night in Fort Wayne wanting to be a baseball announcer, and I walked out wanting to be a hockey announcer, because I'd seen the game live, and I'd seen the collisions and the speed, and I didn't understand offside and icing, but I'd seen a legitimate fight that was not all-star wrestling. It was actually two guys throwing punches. And this struck me as a wonderful sport, and as I learned more about it, I realized that my ambition had changed that night in Fort Wayne. And then it was just a question of how do you get to do it. And that took some time, but finally 47 years ago, I was able to do it.
What are some of the moments from your earlier days and calling games with like the Flyers and the Devils when you kind of look back and you think like those are some of the more like the fondest moments or the more humbling moments that you've had in calling broadcasting and getting to where you ended up all those years later?
Well, there were some simplistic sort of moments with the Flyers. When I arrived, I had, of course, been a fan watching games on television, and I spent 7 years in the minors riding buses, and some of it's documented in the book. And we had in the IHL, I was there for 4 years, and we had at the end of the first period in Des Moines, Iowa, there was a wedding on the ice, and I won't give you a lot of the details because there isn't time to go into how it all unfolded, but the two coaches and the referee of the game that night all wound up going to the NHL. And the American League, we had what was called Scoro, which is still done in a number of NHL cities. And the prize for winning Scoro was a car. And one night we had the crowd chanting, two cars, two cars. And again, the details take quite a bit of time to go through. So I guess it's a way I'm teasing the book, but it's all described there. But it involves a drawing and our captain skating out to do the draw and having two winners and the representative of the Chevy dealers of northern New England saying, I can't give away two cars, I can only give away one. And that was some of those humbling early days in the minors. But by the time I'd gotten to the NHL in 1980, there were still plenty of guys that did not wear helmets. They were easier to identify, and because I'd been a fan of the NHL, the first game that I ever did was a preseason game between the Flyers and Canadians. It was the last game of the preseason. All the cuts had been made. And so I recognized Bobby Clark and Bill Barber and Reggie Leach because of their haircuts, and Larry Robinson for the Montreal Canadiens and all the Hall of Famers that they had in their lineup. And so it was a very easy call to make. There weren't many names and numbers to learn because you could identify everybody. There were lots of fights in those days, something that doesn't happen that much now. And there were lots of exciting times at the Old Odd where you worked from a bucket attached to the balcony and you could see really well. And there was the Earl of Bud who would dance down in the stands at a certain point when they played tequila. But this is probably something that older listeners to your show will remember, and perhaps the younger ones may have been told about.
Yeah, and to kind of go a little bit with more of the game now, maybe today, how do you feel about the way that the game has changed from when you started and from the 80s into the 90s to today's game? And just how do you feel that transition has gone and how today's game is turning out to be?
Well, we have the best players in the world playing it now, and some of the best players weren't playing it when I first broke in the NHL. They were behind the Iron Curtain in the 1980s, and there were still some of the world's great players were not able to play in the league that I was watching. And now you can pretty well rest assured that the best guys that are available are the ones that are in the NHL. We had 20 countries represented in the 24-team tournament that took place in August and September, and they were arguably the best that were available in the NHL at the time. So that has changed. I really have admired players from both eras, and I say both eras because there was the Wild West show that was rough and tumble and had high scoring in the 70s and in the 80s, and then the defensive game that started in the mid-90s and then was legislated out when we came out of the year-long lockout, and now the game that is mostly speed and high energy and shot blocking and all of that now. And I still love the sport for what it has become, but I do admire the guys who played back in the earlier era. Here is a statement that was made to me by Barry Trotz, who currently coaches the New York Islanders, but it was back when he was coaching in Nashville. He was there 15 years. I said, courage seems to be a lot different. And he said, when I first began coaching, courage was what it took to get through the night as a player. because there were fights. It was rough. And that was what it took to get through the night. Courage now to get through a game is the courage to go into the corner and take a hit, the courage to block shots, the courage to drop down in front of shots that are coming at 100 miles an hour from back the point, the courage to drive to the net. So it's not a game that doesn't require strength of character and courage. It's just a different kind. I admire the guys that play it now, and I admire the guys that played it back then. If you decide that you're going to just dislike the way a game is compared to what it once was, I think you become a grumpy old man.
Well, it certainly has been. Even because, Doc, not to make you feel older, Andy, I'm 28, going to be 29 here soon. But even from when I first started watching hockey in the late 90s, early 2000s, it really even then has changed quite a bit from being a more physical game and having more of those players, you know, like the fourth line grinders, quote unquote, that would go on the ice and play maybe, you know, 5 minutes a night and really wouldn't get much more ice time. But now today, the speed of the game and just the overall physical nature, you could be on the top line and you still have to be a physical player, the same physicality as you would have to have on the fourth line. And just seeing that kind of change in the game, you know, hearing you talk and hearing that quote from Barry Trotz, it does really kind of speak to just, you know, the transition of the game, but still the love for the game there is completely there no matter how you see the game.
Yeah, it's still a 4x6 net, and it's still a 5-ounce puck, and 1x3 and a disc, and all of that. But you have, for example, Barry Trotz coaches a team that has a line that includes Casey Cizikas at center, Matt Martin on left wing, and Cal Clutterbuck on the right side. And they'll generate somewhere around 500 or 600 hits a piece. And back in 1995, which is 25 years ago, when the Devils won the Stanley Cup and Lou Lamoriello was their general manager, they had a line of Mike Peluso, Bobby Holik, and Randy McKay, which also had offensive production, but was a feared line, and it was nicknamed the Crash Line because they generated a different kind of fear when they came out. And they would come out after goals were scored. Sometimes they would start games, and it was their job to establish what was then called Devils hockey. And now as these guys start almost every Islanders game and almost every Islanders period with the notion of establishing Islanders hockey. So even though the nature of the speed and all of that is different, there are some principles that have remained the same, and it's fun. 50 years ago, I began covering NHL games, and in that first year, I was an unpaid reporter for an evening newspaper near Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And the first game that I covered was at Civic Arena in Pittsburgh, and it was the very first game played by the Buffalo Sabres. Mm. And a guy named Generette was there broadcasting the game. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
That he would have done 50 years, and from all indications, he's going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's magnificent to have. I always love to hear Rick's stories, although he and I usually wound up working the same game in adjacent booths. And there was never much time before a game to hear the stories. And he and I, of course, departed the arenas when the game was over. Mm-hmm. But I always marveled at not only his excellence through all those years, but his longevity and of course, the love that the fans have for him.
Doc Emmerich, legendary NHL play-by-play man, joining us here on the Wester Hotline. I know you brought up the Winter Classic in the Dave Hannon 4-overtime game here in Buffalo, but what are some of your fondest memories of the city and coming to Buffalo on a you know, not a regular basis, but you'd be here about 3-5 times a year to call games or whatnot, depending on how you were scheduled. But what did you make of the city of Buffalo and coming in and your time as a broadcaster coming in?
Well, during that time, of course, there were some. I was never there on New Year's Eve. It seems like the Devils and I was with the Devils 3 seasons and then 18 in a row. And we rarely wound up there New Year's Eve. But, of course, there was that tradition of tuxedo night on New Year's Eve that they had. And so those were always fun. But invariably, we would be at one of the two hotels that was walking distance to the Odd. And then later on, we would be on, I believe it was called Indian Drive, or at one of those hotels that was located a good distance away. But I would like to take the train. You probably call it the subway, or that would run right straight down to the current arena.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like riding that in the afternoon, because I would come down around 3:30 or 4 o'clock, and there was a great place to get a slice of pizza on the way. I'd stop off there and then grab it and then continue to go. And of course, the arena that was built there and the hotel was after I had started coming there on a regular basis, so I didn't get a chance to see that. And because I was only assigned by NBC to be there during playoff years, that was finished and constructed after I during the playoff drought, so I never got to see that. So I do regret that. But the thing that struck me during all of those years was, regardless of how good or how not good the Sabres were, the fans were always there, and they were always strong in their support, and they were loyal. And I always admired that. I know some years it was tough.
Yeah, and unfortunately it's been a little more tough recently, but the hope is that this team can start to turn things around here. But do you have any thoughts on that? You think of the Sabres when you look ahead to this team and kind of their forward trajectory into the coming years. You got any thoughts on what you think the Sabres are going to be looking like in the next couple of years?
Well, we always have hope, don't we? Especially, you know, I'm having been a network announcer, I cheer for everybody. And I certainly cheer for the places that have loyal fan followings and have agonized and suffered a lot. And there isn't a lot of sympathy for Detroit around the league, but they've suffered a lot now too. And Chicago, I think, is just starting to go into the suffering mode, because mm-hmm. they have failed some lately. But no one has the longer stretch of suffering than Buffalo. I don't know specifics about what I would do were I in charge. I think well-meaning people have tried their best to make this happen, and I hope that at least the new moves will succeed. Because I sure would like to see Buffalo back in the playoffs and becoming the vibrant teams that I used to see when Lindy Ruff was there and Danny Briere and all of those exciting things that used to happen, Ryan Miller in goal. And I know I'm talking the past, but that's what I had to celebrate when I was coming in, was those athletes in the past, and hopefully it won't be long before we can celebrate the present.
Yeah, for sure. Real quick, before we let you go here, Doc, I know that there are a lot of young aspiring broadcasters in this world that want to be able to get into a position like I am, where I'm on the radio and I get the chance to talk about hockey, football, any types of these sports. You were in a position where you got to call play-by-play for hockey games, not just for specific teams, but for every team around the NHL. And you were the voice of hockey for so long when it came to being on the television with NBC. But for anyone that is the younger group that is aspiring to be a broadcaster or get into any type of media outlet here, what would be the best advice that you could give them? And I know you wrote some of that in your book, reading it a little bit here over the past few days, but what's the best advice that you can give to any of these young people that are in colleges or you're looking to go to college or whatnot, that are aspiring to be in your shoes, in anyone's shoes in the media?
Don't quit. It's worth aspiring to. There is no rule that you have to hate your job. And the one thing about this, it's largely pleasant. And you go to work with a smile on your face most days. And most of the people that you work around have a smile on their face, too. Oh, there are some goal scorers that are going through slumps that might be grousing. But by and large, it's a pleasant atmosphere. And it is separated from so much of the division. I learned a lot, I think, by watching, though not talking, with Vin Scully. After all these years, we never knew what political party or whether it was independent that Vin favored. And you know why? Because every time that Vin signed on, It was every one of you pull up a chair. We're united for these next three or extra innings, 4 hours. And we're going to share this experience together, regardless of your race, regardless of your religion, your economic status, anything about you. We're all in this together. Pull up a chair. And so nothing interceded that was in any way going to cause you to feel separated from the group. You were here because you wanted to listen to a baseball game. And that is the advantage that I think all of us have that are in sports right now. We can stay away, I think, from those things which have divided us and talk about the things that unify us, a love for the Sabres, a love for the Bisons, a love for anything that is moving in the sports world right now, the Bills. And we can stay on that subject, I think, and actually help people enjoy 3 or 4 hours of time. And that's what Vin always did, too. I think that the other thing, too, about our job is that it is fun. And the reason I say don't quit is there's a lot of rejection because not everybody gets the job that they want. And so that's why I believe in your own skills and continue to work and continue to do what you enjoy doing, but recognize there will be times you'll be disappointed because you don't get that promotion, you don't get that network job that you'd like, but keep working on your skills and believe in yourself and be happy where you are, and you might make that extra step that you want to make sometime. Many are called, few are chosen, but somebody gets chosen eventually, and who's to say it won't be you?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of long. I'm sorry.
No, that's perfect. And for somebody that has gone through that and hearing that, it does bring back a lot of just, you know, going through the hard work it is to get through, you know, the college and going through internships and other things that allow you to get to the point where you need to get to and where you aspire to get to down the road. Mike, it's been great chatting with you. I want to let you get the chance to plug your book here. Where can we find your book and just other details that you want to get across with the book called Off Mic?
Well, it's available anywhere books are sold, online or in person, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the usual places. And 100% of anything that Triumph sends me goes to the hands-on care of animals. People have asked me, is there a charity you want any donations to go to? No. If you have an animal and you're at the vet's office and you have a little extra, ask the vet. And some vets have this. If they have a second chance fund or some sort of separate fund that they keep in reserve in case someone comes in that desperately needs a surgery that can't afford it, sometimes vets have that. There are two in our immediate area that do, that it's a secret fund that they can draw on when there's a desperate situation and the people are out of work or they just cannot afford a surgery that a pet needs. Contribute to that. That's what we're doing with this. So if you don't like the book, at least feel good about the fact that you spent money that at least part of which goes to me, and all of that winds up going to hands-on care of pets.
Well, Mike, I tell you, I've read through some of your book, and I've enjoyed it so far. I can't wait to keep reading it. But again, it's Off Mike, How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice. Mike Doc Emmerich, thanks again for taking the time joining me here on the show. Best of luck to you with the book. Best of luck with your retirement, and enjoy being able to relax and take the time to actually sit back on your couch or reclining chair and watching hockey on TV whenever that comes back.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and let's go Buffalo.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Thank you.
Mike Doc Emmerich joining us here on the West Her Hotline. Really a pleasure speaking with him. One of the guys that obviously watching hockey, I heard a lot of, whether it was on, you know, TV or listening and watching old highlights on YouTube and watching Devils hockey, Flyers hockey. He called it all, and he was there, and you know, He is a voice of hockey, one of the voices of hockey that voice will not go away for a long time. And I really, really appreciate Doc taking the time to join us here. If you missed it, it'll be on demand. Franklin will throw that up on demand in its own little section at WGR550.com. And again, if you're listening on the radio.com app, feel free to use that radio rewind function and listen back to a really, really good chat with one of the best in the business. And he was so gracious to join us. And man, that was awesome.
I really enjoyed the stories that he told, and even just that little, you know, motivational speech to all the young broadcasters out there. I was ready to run through this wall.
Yeah, I know. And the stories of Buffalo, he brought up a few, and you know, you liked it. So go back and listen and really take the time and enjoy it. 803-0551-888-550-2550. That's the number here to get a hold of us. When we come back, I want to give my rankings for the top reverse retro jerseys. I know that Jeremy and I wrote an article about it at WGR550.com where we put it in tiers. I want to give you my top 10 best jerseys and top 5 worst jerseys. We'll get that in the final 25 minutes of the show. We'll get through that here. Coming up next on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.